Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to this episode of Talking Points. I'm your host, Brian Kelly, the points guy. And today I have a fabulous new friend as a guest. She wears so many hats, including Tony Award winner, Randi Zuckerberg. Thank you so much for joining Talking Points.
Thank you. This is the first interview I've done since winning the Tonys. Yay! So, and you're the first person who gets to introduce me like that.
Did you ever think you'd be a Tony Award winner?
No, never in my wildest dreams. And I have to say, I left Silicon Valley about 4 years ago to move to New York City. And I told everyone in my life, you know, I have this passion for Broadway. I'm going to go to New York. I'm going to produce theater. And they all laughed at me. They all told me.
And that's when you know you have a good idea. When people laugh
at
you.
They were like, that's the worst idea
you're
ever.
You're like, cliche. What are you, Sex and the City? You're going to move to New York and work for Vogue?
That's right. Oh, yeah, and they're like, sure. Yeah, you're going to be a theater producer. And then walking up on stage to get the Tony is all of you.
There's so much we need to talk about today because you, your career, your background. Actually, let's start from the beginning. So you went to Harvard.
Thank you for saying that because I have another sibling who didn't go to Harvard or who went and didn't graduate.
You graduated.
Thank you for leading with that.
A younger sibling. But you went, you graduated, and then your first job was in advertising,
yes,
right?
Yes. It was at a great firm called Ogilvy & Mather. And it was funny because something very lucky happened to me when I got there, but I thought it was the worst luck. Everyone else who was entry level got staffed on these glamorous campaigns with like Queer Eye for the Straight Guy and everything. And I got staffed on this brand new team called Digital Marketing. Mm-hmm. And I was pissed off. I was like, I do not want to be in this dead end job. What is this?
Before social media, really?
There was nothing. And I got the last laugh when 2 years later, all of the other entry-level hires were still basically getting coffee full-time on television sets. That's right. And I was part of one of the fastest money-making growing teams in the business.
And one of your first clients was American Express.
Yes. I got to work on the Black Card.
The Black Card. Were you allowed to tell anyone about it? Because, you know, Amex is so tight-lipped about it these days.
They're very secretive, although there was a point, you know, it's been 20 years or so. I'm not sure that I could list all the benefits. I could list the fine print of the benefits of the Platinum and the Black Card.
So how for an advertising agency that doesn't advertise the card, like what were you doing?
We were designing some of the packaging that the Black Card came in and kind of the experience. It was really, because it was digital marketing, but it was really early days, we were designing what kind of the web and digital experience looked like for kind of new Black Card members. So it was very exciting. It was very early days internet. But
do you have a Black Card now?
No. And it's so funny because everyone always asked that when I was working on it. And I was like, I'm going to be real with you. I make $32,000 working at this ad agency. I do not, I'm not on Amex's high list.
Hoping for a gold card.
That's right. I was like, I'll go with the blue cash.
Or the plum card or whatever.
That's right.
The zinc card. That was it, the early mid-2000s.
Yes, exactly. It was really fun, and that was really my first professional entree
into
seeing the power of different credit cards and what they could be used for and how to really make them work for you.
And Amex, I guess, was 05, 06 was this?
Yeah, this was 03.
03, 04. Okay. 04. Yeah, and Amex was the big...
They were really the leader in that space, especially for small businesses with Open the Small Business Network. And one thing that always struck me about Amex that I remember, even though I was only 22, 23 myself at the time, is what a great place it was to work for women. Mm-hmm. There's so many women in senior leadership positions there. And so
on this podcast.
That's fabulous. It's meant a lot to me even at an early age in my career.
You're working at Ogilvy, living in New York, and then, you know, your younger brother starts this thing.
That's right. He calls me,
And tell the truth. You know how people rolled their eyes at you when you said you wanted to do performance? When he was like, I'm going to build this platform, did you roll your eyes and say,
no, totally. Yeah. I totally did. Because he's like, I'm building this thing called the Facebook, and I could really use someone who knows digital marketing to help me. I think what he really meant by that was that he needed someone who would work for free. That's really what he meant. And
because
he called
me. Because I'm sure $32,000, he couldn't even match your salary.
That's
but,
right. It was a startup. And I definitely had this moment where I was like, I work in an ad agency. I live in Manhattan. Right. I would never go work for my little brother's project in suburban California. I would never do that. But he convinced me to go out and take a look at what they're doing. And he convinced me. He was like, I'll buy you a JetBlue ticket to California.
A JetBlue ticket. And they didn't even have Mint back then.
That's right. And I was like,
Extra leg room, fine.
He's like, don't push your luck. But so I went out.
You got your one-way ticket. Yes. And what did your parents think of this? Like, Randy leaving her corporate job at a primo company.
I don't think anyone thought it was a risk at first because I just went out to visit him and I kind of fell in love with just the entrepreneurial pace of Silicon Valley. I was out there for about a week and I sort of had this flash of my career because they were working on the logo and the design and they were like, all right, Randy, you're the marketer, you pick. And a decade of my life at Ogilvy flashed before my eyes because I was like, it would take me 10 years to get into a room where I'm making these decisions about a brand. And so at the end of the week, I was like, all right, I'm in. I'm doing this.
So what year was that?
This was exactly 05.
05.
Yes,
okay.
Summer.
So this is when it
summer
really started
05.
To spread school to
That's
school.
Right.
So that was viral before we knew what viral meant, really. Like
That's right.
And I'm sure the servers were crashing left and right.
Oh, yeah, all the time. I think my entire marketing budget that I had for my first year there was one box of t-shirts. That was my marketing budget. I know it's very hard to imagine a world where Facebook isn't this behemoth company.
And what was your role? Were you like...
I had about 12 different business cards, depending on who I was meeting with. Like, who does this person want me to be? Yeah. One was like biz dev, marketing. I think I had one that said samurai warrior on it for like if I didn't know what the person wanted me to be. I mean, it's so exciting. Mm-hmm. You know what it's like to be in those early days of a startup where everyone is doing
everything is
12
so...
jobs. You're like at the business school of life. You're learning on the fly. It was amazing.
After I did the Points Guy and had sold it, I was like, should I go back to business school? My dad was like, hello. It's like an Olympic swimmer saying, should I go take a lesson at the elementary school? You know, like, granted, no, I'm not putting down business school.
No, you should be teaching at the business school.
All the grad students, you know, who become consultants, which is like our bread and butter. So I'll go to like top business schools and like just do the whole points talk and stuff.
Yes.
And they're always like, there are more people here for your points talk. Because, you know, once you graduate B school, you're like on
of
the road.
Of course. So. It's funny that you say that because my husband, his first job was at McKinsey. And that was my first introduction to people who were like crazy points hoarders. Mm-hmm. And he like some
spreadsheets
some of his colleagues would have spreadsheets. Like they would check in and out of the same hotel every night while they were on the road
hotel
to like
hopping.
Count as more stays or things like that.
Back in the Starwood days, maybe.
Even then, I think even at 23, I was like, that is exhausting. Like, I'm not quite sure that's worth it in life.
There's this hysterical new Instagram account that I love. It's called Crazy Management Consultants. And it's basically that whole management consultant lifestyle and funny memes. It's like my favorite new account. You got to check
it
out.
Wait, I'm definitely going to check that
crazy
out.
Crazy Management Consultants. So you spent years at Facebook during the most amazing, you know, the company was just growing so rapidly. And then you made a jump. At what point were you like, I want to go create Zuckerberg Media?
Gosh, you know, it definitely wasn't something that happened overnight. But I was with Facebook for almost 7 years, which in startup years, it's dog years, right? I mean, by the time I left, I was like grandma Facebook. Yeah. I had outlasted, I think, most of the early employees at the company. And I had just worked on a project, which was... kind of the early version of Facebook Live that my team had created. And we hosted President Obama. We had all these amazing things. And I felt like, you know what? The company's about to IPO.
Yeah.
I feel like the train is on the track. Yeah. And my big passion was getting more women into business and tech and STEM. And so it felt like the right time for me to kind of have the Randy show.
Speaking of women, you know, it's funny, the Points Guy, we have about 80 employees now, and we are more females work at the Points Guy than men, which I'm proud of.
Because you're smart. No.
I know, right?
smart
and
boss.
Our podcasting team, when we launched our vlog, we did YouTube Lives and all this stuff, and it was... 8 people in the room. I was surrounded by super smart, media savvy women running the show. So it's been really...
I love it. Even our two podcast engineers right now are women. It's great.
Yeah, Margaret. Yeah, Caroline. Have we made huge strides in getting more women into the sciences, particularly?
Yes and no. Yeah. I mean, when you look at it over kind of a 50-year mark, we've made huge strides. I mean, I remember talking to my mom. She was the only woman in her medical school class. Mm. Now there's more women graduating from medical school than men and becoming doctors. So in some fields of science and tech, we have made incredible strides. Where I think the drop-off really happens, though, is kind of there's that kind of messy middle of your career where a lot of women are really struggling to juggle family and career. And so when you look at the upper levels of senior management in companies, that's really where we have a lot of work to do. I think we have a lot of work to do in funding startups that are led by women, but still a lot of work to do.
What are some actual fixes, like better maternity, better corporate planning around maternity leave?
And yeah, it's funny. So I've done so much research, Brian, on this space. I had all these hypotheses when I left Facebook about where the drop-off is. So the first drop-off that happens is at 8 years old is the first drop-off when we start to lose girls in STEM. So we have lost a generation of entrepreneurs before they even become entrepreneurs, simply because around second, third, fourth grade, girls are establishing their identity, there's social pressure, they're saying, oh, that's for boys.
Interesting.
The first thing we need to do is we need to get into schools at second, third, fourth grade and make sure that we don't lose those girls.
Interesting.
Then the girls that we are
able to... Do you think
our
teachers being trained on that now, or elementary school teachers have those skills to change how they phrase things in classrooms? And
you know, I think this is kind of the big socioeconomic divider of our country. I think the cities and the schools that have enough money and where the parents have enough money to advocate for good STEM and tech programs are doing a great job. Where I worry is that we're losing people in the middle of the country. We're losing people in zip codes where schools don't have the funds to be setting up kind of state-of-the-art STEM and tech labs. And so this becomes an issue of both kind of socioeconomic divide and gender divide in a very complicated way.
It is so sad. And this is not a political podcast, but it's like with so many issues going on, I think we always forget. And as I travel around the world and you see the emphasis on education in so many countries, I think we always think the U.S. is number one. I think a lot of people just have this notion that we're the richest country, we're like the best in education. But when you see the stats, especially in the sciences, like we are way down. I think last I saw was number 60 out of 190 countries in terms of like high school science.
We have so much work to do. And that's why, so one of my latest projects I've been working on is this kind of techie dessert cafe called Sue's Tech Kitchen. And we go into cities around the country and kids can come in and they can 3D print chocolate. They can have crepes and pancakes made by robots. And we purposefully put them in zip codes that aren't getting that access in schools. So we did a great partnership in Jackson, Mississippi. We had so many incredible students come through. Unfortunately, Mississippi is ranked 50 out of 50 states in the U.S. for Wi-Fi access, even lower than Hawaii and Alaska. And I think it's only 6% of schools in the state of Mississippi are teaching computers. So how could a student in rural Mississippi compete with a student in Silicon Valley? They just can't. And so
it will forever be that way.
That's right. So again, I know this isn't a political podcast or anything, but I think there's a lot of issues in our own backyard that I feel lucky to have done so much traveling like you to have my eyes opened to them.
Okay, let's take a quick pause right now and hear from our sponsors.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Let's talk travel, because you are Global Services.
I am. I've been for about, 5 or 6 years
What was
now.
It like? How did you get the notice that you were Global Services?
You know, I didn't even know Global Services existed, but I was doing a ton of speaking around the world. there are not that many women that lecture on technology, unfortunately. I hope that in the future I'm not as in demand as I am now, because I hope there's so many women on the speaking circuit that I'm less in demand. But unfortunately, there's not that many women that will travel around the world and speak about issues of tech who have been on the forefront of a startup. So there was one year that I was everywhere. I mean, I was in the Middle East, and I think I was three times in Australia. And so when December came around, I got this like ping, you know, welcome to global services.
Oh,
I didn't even know what. I had to do research. I didn't even know what it was. And now it is like one of the things that is most important to me to figure out how to keep and hold on to in my life.
And United is now going to pause status for maternity.
Yes.
Randy, today is actually basically her last day before going on maternity.
Yes, I'm very, very pregnant. It's funny. So I actually got invited to a lunch for some of the top global services folks with Oscar, with some of the senior leadership at United. And everyone kind of went around the room and said, you know, some things that they would want to improve about the experience. And most people said the food. And it got to me and I was like, listen, I was like, I have two things on my mind right now. First is having a healthy baby. Second is not losing my global services status because of having a healthy baby.
Wow.
As I think about it, you know, a lot of these frequent flyer status programs are calculated on how much you spend or how much you fly in a year. You know, I had a healthy pregnancy where I was able to travel up until the end. A lot of women are on bed rest. And I mean, there are so many aspects of professional life as a woman where you pay the woman tax. Like, I'm exhausted, quite frankly, from all of the woman taxes I've paid in my life and career. And so just to, like, sit there and as the only woman at that table with global services and to, like, have to waste brain energy on thinking that I might lose it, I was so tired. I was like, I have to say something.
And their response was receptive?
Almost right after that, Delta announced Delta. That they were pausing.
Delta is pausing it, and then hopefully United.
Yes, hopefully United will follow suit. What I like about Delta's program is it's not just for maternity leave. It's for anyone who needs to take a pause, maybe to care for a sick loved one, a caregiver. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why men might need to take a pause on status, too. It isn't just a woman's issue. I do think right now a lot of these frequent flyer programs are accidentally biased against women of childbearing age and need to be fixed.
That needs to be fixed. What do you think about the state of technology in travel in terms of not just airline websites and apps and making the travel experience easier? Where do you see the biggest need to up our game in the travel industry?
Yeah. First of all, I mean, every traveler is carrying a phone around. When you go into an airport, I mean, they should really know you. They should be able to personalize an experience to you. It's kind of wild, like the amount of time we spend in airports in different cities and the phone you have that they can't geotag.
And they know what like fare class you're traveling in. And because a lot of times getting into the Polaris Lounge versus a United Club versus on Fair Class, it's confusing. And there's still not an easy way to say, nope, you're in Polaris, go to this lounge near this gate or this one. Like,
totally.
They still have a lot of work to do.
Yes. I mean, I feel like I'm sure you have even way more than me. I feel like if I'm going on a trip, I have at least like 16 different apps that I'm checking, whether it's the weather and the flight route schedules. And there has to be a better way to consolidate all of that into one experience for travelers.
I've teased it before. We're in the throes now of redoing our TPG app that's going to actually track not just travel, but points, how to earn them, redeem them, and keep track of everything. So biometric technology, I hope for the day where we can walk into an airport, not have to pull out a piece of paper passport and boarding pass. And a lot of people will say that's too much security-wise.
I love it and I'm skeptical at the same time. I love technology and I'm very biased in favor of it. So my first gut reaction is always like, yes. And then I like to look at the deep ethical questions. So I agree with you. I think I would love to just, with a lot of ease, go through airports, not just airports, stadiums.
Yeah.
As a mom, my heart drops every time I hear about school shootings horrific things that are happening. Biometrics will stop a lot of that. So I think it will really improve national security and safety and ease of getting through these crowded places. On the other hand, though, I do worry about that kind of information in the hands of private companies.
Yeah.
I mean, I worry about it in the hands of the government too, yeah. But I think we really have to ask those tough ethical questions, you know,
who gets it, it's being used.
What if it gets hacked? Yeah. How is it used? Especially if people are collecting really detailed info about your health and where you're going and things like that.
What are your travel go-tos? Do you have Clear? I know you fly United out of Newark.
Yeah, as soon as Clear opens in Newark, I will be a Clear customer. But Newark, I spend more time there than my own home, I think.
Yes.
Although what's so funny is that thanks to global services, I can actually show up at the airport about 10 minutes before boarding. I am so
jealous of that when they take the globals to the front of the pre-check lane, which is of course a mile long.
They're right at boarding. So it's like those moments.
I use my points too much. Like I don't spend huge amounts because I got to practice what I preach. So I have like top tier on a couple airlines, but never like the.
Yeah, well, you have to really commit to one airline, and mostly I'm speaking and doing business, and other people are paying.
Is it a part of your contract, like United or bus? Like I'm not coming. Or do they usually just let you book whatever you want?
They usually they either give me a travel buyout or they just tell me the tickets.
But do you ever sometimes want to just splurge and go like Emirates first class?
Of course. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But that's the problem because then once you start getting used to that like elevated level, then even going back to business class, you're like, oh, that's just business class.
I know. I did fly Emirates first class once and that was a really life-changing experience.
Or Singapore where they're like, would you like Dom or Krug? And you're like, oh my God, this is on a plane.
Like on Emirates first class, they don't even have a menu. They're just like, what do you want?
Yeah.
I was like, wait, this is an airplane. What do you mean? Like, what do I want? They're like, I don't know. You want a lobster? Do you want
a little stir fry? Yeah.
I was like, this is
a little champagne vinaigrette as they're pouring like Dom into the salad dressing.
Although I don't know if you've ever flown Qatar Airlines, which is also amazing. And apparently unaccompanied falcons can fly only in business or first class. So I had an unaccompanied falcon.
No, you didn't. Because I've seen it in the rules.
Yes.
With the hood on it?
Yeah, with like a little hood. Yeah, that was probably the wildest thing I've ever seen on an airplane.
Never a dull moment.
No, never a dull moment with world travel. So I love it. It opens your eyes to so many things.
How was traveling pregnant? Is there one set time stop the doctors say you shouldn't?
So technically, you can fly up to 36 weeks of your pregnancy. Some airlines will ask you for a doctor's note after 30 weeks because they really don't want the liability of having to ground a plane.
Yeah.
But I think it's really up to the individual.
And so you've flown up to?
Yeah, so I flew up to about 35 weeks.
Wow. And not nervous at all?
I mean, maybe a little. But I do have to say, I mean, this doesn't happen to me in the United States very much, but a lot if I'm traveling in Asia or other countries where they'll call for global services and I'll walk up and they'll see kind of a younger woman and they'll say, sorry, we're only boarding global services right now.
What's your response to that? Do you get sassy Randy? Like, oh no, you didn't.
I used to get sassy, and then I was just I need to conserve the energy that I waste on this. So I'll just kind of show them my boarding pass. Yeah. But that doesn't happen in the United States. Yeah. But
it is abroad.
Yes. Yeah. But every time they call global services and I walk up like very pregnant. I mean, I look the exact opposite of what you think a global services passenger would look like.
Some of them have, from years of travel, they have similar bellies.
I wait for it. I'm waiting for them to judge me.
So are you a points hoarder? You know, you're on the global services hamster wheel. Like you got to pay.
I know.
How do you use your points?
Well, I have two children and a third on the way. I love to use my points on just having like fabulous family time. Last year, we went to Maui for almost 3 weeks
entirely on points.
We flew business class on Newark, Honolulu. And we did one in Ireland and Scotland entirely on points. That was great. So I think I'm more of kind of I hoard them for the year and then spend them
You can hoard as long as you have. So many people hoard for, I'm going to, in 5 years when I retire, I'm going to use them. I'm like, no, because they're going to be worth a lot less.
Totally. I know. The other thing that I have done a lot is donate them in election years. Mm-hmm. So if I am saving up points, I'll donate them to a campaign in order to help people with get out the vote efforts.
That's awesome. So final question, window or aisle seat?
Almost always a window, except while I'm pregnant, aisle for sure. Although what I really love is getting like that single the single seat in the aisle. Yes. Yeah. So if you can try to get the single, that's like the dream come true. Yes. But I think you'll appreciate it. I have a kind of a crazy schedule when I come off of my maternity leave. Mm-hmm. And so I spend way more time than a human should, like looking at different flight routes between countries and looking
stuff.
Like, I think I'm going to the Ivory Coast in Africa and then to St. Petersburg in Russia straight from there. And so I've literally spent hours.
Yes. Both ways.
Yes.
Yeah.
Air France, Paris.
The 777 is your best bet for business class.
See, I'll think of you when I'm sitting on a nice flight. I'll think of you. But I mean, I think I spent almost 3 hours like looking at all the different flight routes.
Well, if you ever need to bounce ideas, Randy, I'm here for you. Thank you.
Likewise.
Thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on your Tony. Congratulations on your impending baby.
Thank you.
And enjoy some much needed time off.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
That's it for this episode of Talking Points. I'm your host, Brian Kelly, and a huge thank you once again to Randy Zuckerberg for taking time out to chat all things travel, entrepreneurship, and fabulosity. And thanks again to my team, Margaret Kelly, Caroline Chagrin. Much to my chagrin, I said her name wrong. Caroline Chagrin, I usually say it right.
That's a good save, though.
And my amazing assistant, Christy Matsui. That's it for this episode. Safe travels. Yay! Thank you.
That's awesome.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.